Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, but we are not in Baltimore anymore, but you sort of run Baltimore, too. The governor of Maryland is here, Don Mohler, former Baltimore County Executive. We're in Annapolis.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
How are you?
Doing great. I just came back from multiple stops all over Baltimore to meet you guys in Annapolis, so but we're happy you're here supporting a local restaurant.
You would have met me, but well, you wore purple today, so is that Kiefer that told you to wear purple today?
I'm a big Ravens fan. Can't wait to get the season started.
And this weekend, you were running around at Caves Valley, saw one of the great golf tournaments.
I got to tell you, I'm not a golfer, but I went to this thing knowing it was going to be a good tournament. It was the most exciting thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I got a workout because I had to present the trophy, and we had to run back and forth between 17 and 18 six times for the playoff.
So you were one of the.
We kept moving. I was like sweating out there. It was 100 degrees.
Did you have a good view when it lipped out?
Or no? I was right there. I was standing right next to the green.
So you were
incredible.
One of the people
I
running back.
All the last seven holes, like right there on the green.
Well, I've never seen anything like it, Governor. Just what you described. If you go back to 16, when Cantlay started to make the putts.
He made
nine straight. Must make putts.
So I didn't get to see much of the rest of the tournament because so after 16, when he got to 17, 18, I saw them multiple times.
We're here on the Crab Cake Tour, and I was telling the folks here, I came down to Annapolis for Crab Cake a couple weeks ago. I went down to Davis's, and I came past here, and I'm a Springsteen fan. Show a little faith. There's magic in the night, right? So I said, we're going to do a crab cake with you here. I knew we would make it to the Boatyard. So
it's a great spot.
Well, beautiful. Jimmy Buffett had a crab cake here. So if it's good enough for Jimmy Buffett, it's good
that.
Enough. It's true.
Wow.
Pictures on the wall.
We should have invited Bacon. Jimmy. Yeah, Jimmy Buffett should have joined us today.
Kevin Bacon right behind
Bacon,
you. He was here also. So
And now we got you guys.
I want to talk about crab cakes in a second segment because we're going to bring it out. This is my 40th crab cake in 30 days.
Wow.
I've had a crab cake.
How about your job when I grow up?
It's tough. Work. I've gained 10 pounds, Governor. You start talking about walking. I walked the golf course 4 hours yesterday, too. Politically and where we are in the state, one thing I would say for me, driving the state, you brought up Wi-Fi last week, and that was an issue. I've talked to lots of politicians. I've sat with Michael Steele. I've sat with Barry Glassman. I've sat with Heather Mazur. I've sat with Jake Day over at Salisbury.
Yeah. Rick Meehan, Ocean City.
Right. When you drive off of 50 or off of 60, 68 or 70, that's been my experience to get videos, text out to family.
We have the same issue, yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing I've noticed traveling the state, that if I'm going to sit with the governor, I'm going to say, this is something we got to fix.
What about rural broadband? Yeah. Well, so it's something we've been focused on for 6.5 years, and we've now got more than 90% of the state covered, but there are still pockets on the Eastern Shore and Western Maryland, Southern Maryland. We even have a few the kind of urban broadband issues in the city. And so we took $100 million of state money and $300 million of some of this federal relief money to make sure that every single household, every single person in Maryland by 2025 is going to have access to high-speed internet.
Well, I found that the prettier the road, the less likely that we were going to have
that's about
access.
Right. Yeah. Well, so the last mile of that is so expensive, and so companies never did it. That's why the government has to actually invest in doing it because it's not profitable. So private sector companies aren't going to.
My
do
wife
it.
Is an engineer with Verizon, so we talk about. Yeah. I mean, I've lived with her through 3G, 4G, 5G, and then we in 2021, in the middle of COVID, we get out where kids, people that have to take Zoom meetings, jobs, all of that. It's a flaming issue as I drive the state.
We already knew it was a big issue, but it really came home to roost during COVID when our kids weren't in school, when people were working remotely, when all of us were communicating, via Zoom, and even with our family, I was Zooming with my grandkids, my kids, because we weren't getting together in person as much. So I think it just exacerbated the problem, and so many more people had to have access to faster internet, and we decided this was something now with the impetus and with the federal investment that we have, it's a good time to finally solve it.
Well, Governor, you mentioned COVID, and we would be remiss to have the governor of the state of Maryland on. You've received, obviously, very good reviews. You talk all of the time about how Maryland is ranking in the metrics, and pretty much in every category we're doing well. But can you update people who are listening where we are right now in this current surge?
Well, so, look, we're concerned about the Delta variant, as, everybody is across the country. Here's the good news. The good news is we're 50th, very lowest Positivity rate in America, we're 50th in the case rate, the lowest of all 50 states in America.
What do you attribute that to? Why is that?
It's great leadership.
No. That's what I was
going to
say.
No. It's well, look, we have people in the state have been really listening to the public health advice, and maybe more than they are in other places. You know, we have you know, people voluntarily wearing masks when they need to in crowded indoor spaces. We're the fifth best as far as people wearing masks, not because they're mandated to, because they want to stay safe. We're one of the very best in the country on vaccinations. We've now vaccinated more than 80% of the entire population, 18 and over. We're almost
80. That's a big number.
Some states are at 30. That's helping us a lot to keep people out of the hospital and to keep people from dying. We now have nearly 95. I think it's 94.6% of all the people 65 and over, which is all the folks in the nursing homes, people my age, you know, folks that are sometimes immunocompromised. And those are the folks that we were losing early on. You know, we've lost more than 9,700 Marylanders. This is not anything to fool with. So the fact that we've got them vaccinated.
Do you ever have anything? I mean, I was watching you, and you were very complimentary, and I give you credit for that. You were very complimentary in a bipartisan way to the local execs.
Yeah, no question.
I know you raved about the Baltimore County operation, which is near and dear to
my heart.
You
know, I was just with Johnny O yesterday at the golf tournament, and I told him I was really proud of his leadership. We worked together with all the local leaders. I think Baltimore County, Howard County, among the larger counties, I think did some of the best work. But everybody, it was a federal, state, and local partnership together with private sector partners and our hospitals. And I mean, we had 11,400 people giving 7.5 million vaccines. We did almost 12 million tests. I mean, this is stuff that we never did before. We had to build an infrastructure from scratch, and it took everybody working together.
Well, I think when I moved everything from sports to Baltimore Positive, I was talking to Dick here at the Boatyard about it a year and a half ago. There was no sports for me to talk about, and every person I talked to, it was so unknown. Every entrepreneur had to move curbside. Every leader had to change. Yeah. Every school teacher, every kid. I mean, it's a societal thing here over the last 18 months, and I don't think any elected official could have prepared for it.
No,
right?
Not at all. Look, we since I've been governor for almost 7 years, we were doing tabletop exercises occasionally at the Maryland Emergency Management Agency, MEMA, about what happens if you have an airborne, you know, virus of some type, you know. But that was just, you know, it was just all make-believe. It was like, how do we prepare? But no one could have imagined something that's now lasted 18 months that killed 6.5 million people across the world. That it was bad as this was, and nobody was ready. I mean, the federal government, the state government, our hospital systems, nobody. And we had to make it up all from scratch. And not only was I trying to keep everybody in Maryland safe, but I was the chairman of the National Governors Association through most of it. And so I had to bring together all 50 governors and share information with each other. We normally talk 3-4 times a year in a conference. We were talking 3-4 times a week, and I led 60-some calls with all 50 governors and the president, vice president, and
during that time, Governor, you mentioned the president. The president, off and on, as he could do in the way he would speak, would be very critical of you. How difficult was it to be a lifelong Republican, have a Republican president criticizing you, and you having to sort of walk this balance in the state, knowing where the Republican base is, trying to get things done? What was the stress of trying to balance all that?
You know, I just tried to ignore all of that. I mean, I was focused on saving lives and livelihoods and couldn't care less what anybody was saying, whether he's the president or not. My job was to keep our people safe, and my second part-time job was leading the governors. And so I pushed back pretty hard on the president when I thought he was making mistakes. I've done that with both presidents now. You know, compliment them when they're doing something right, but tell them here, this is what the governors think you're doing wrong, or this is the help we need that we're not getting. But we've made a lot of progress. I mean, we pushed the administration to get things done. We had no testing available anywhere. You know, we were telling them, the president was saying, anybody that wants a test can get a test. There weren't any in America. You know, we pushed back to get the utilization of the National Guard and Title 32 funding from the feds. You know, they did a great job on Operation Warp Speed, getting the vaccines, and that was a major accomplishment, but then stepped all over the message by not communicating properly and not telling people they should use this great accomplishment.
How frustrating is that? Because you still have pockets in the state of Maryland, Western Maryland, certainly places on the shore.
Places I drove.
That are vaccinated.
Yeah, right. Where you didn't have internet.
Well, I turned the corner over in Hurlock and saw a Confederate flag the size. I mean, yeah. I saw all sorts of things.
And they're vaccine resistant. How frustrating as the CEO of the state to know that we've got the answer to managing this daggone plague, and we've got pockets that are resistant. What do you do to try to reach
them? It's frustrating. I mentioned earlier that we're one of the best in the entire country, and 80% is pretty darn good compared to almost every single state. But it's that last, it's less than 20% now. We're in the teens, so the people that aren't vaccinated is maybe 19-something percent. And it's very difficult to get those last folks convinced. And there's a lot of them out in very rural areas. They're, you know, strong Trump supporters. They've been listening to disinformation. You know, it's on the right. But also on the left, we have anti-vaxxers. And in the black community, we also have had some hesitancy and reluctance. So we're overall, I'm very pleased with Marylanders. I think they paid attention. They listened to the science. They listened to the thing. And they got vaccinated. That's helping keep our hospitals are not overflowing. You know, we're down 70% from our peak. Where Florida and Texas and Mississippi are all peaking right now. They have overflowing hospitals. They got people dying. So I'm proud of Marylanders, but it's frustrating. We can't convince those last, but we've tried everything. We put a massive public information campaign. We got lots of leaders in each of the communities going out and talking to them, trusted voices, you know, faith-based leaders. And it's the last few is a slug, I can tell you.
Now you, Matt, you mandated, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you've mandated vaccines for hospital workers and nursing home workers.
Yeah.
Any thought of expanding that to those that work with young children, either in preschool or elementary school? Where's the thought process on that as you evaluate that?
Yeah, well, so in conjunction, first of all, we provided the very first people that got the vaccines were nursing homes and hospitals. We started that at the end of last year in December. And so we've been 8 or 9 months into that. And some hospitals did great. They had 95% of their staff were vaccinated. Nursing homes, a lot of them did a fantastic job. Because what was happening was the nursing home residents were not going anywhere, but unvaccinated staff was coming in and infecting the residents who we had, you know, massive outbreaks and people dying. And so it amazed me that we weren't getting it all done. We did it in conjunction with the Hospital Association and the Nursing Home Association. They begged me to mandate it because they couldn't get their employees to do it. And so they asked us to do it. So the remaining small percentages of ones that couldn't get it done. So we did that. We also did it for all congregate settings. So anytime in our juvenile justice system and the corrections facilities, when any facilities where we have people living in a community that were state workers. We also were the first state in the country to start vaccinating teachers. And we did about 90% of all the teachers in the state. Started in January, about 4 months before I think the federal government said states had to start vaccinating teachers. So, I think we're at a good point where we are now. As we have from the beginning of this thing, we keep talking to all the experts, the public health doctors, our virologists and epidemiologists, and you know, we're watching the metrics every day. We have a huge team of people, and we have never hesitated to make decisions one way or the other. But we're trying to balance giving people opportunities to make decisions for themselves, keeping our businesses open, getting our kids back to school without causing too much disruption.
Well, you say making decisions on their own, and I guess this is a transition that we get to have good things when 80% of the people are back.
Exactly.
We get to eat crab cakes.
We get to go.
We get to have
see that
Stones
golf tournament
concerts.
Yesterday.
Right.
We get to go to the Ravens game.
We had
80,000 people at Caves over the past four days.
It was unbelievable. So let's talk about the children.
And nearly all of them were vaccinated. We were outside, and everybody had an unbelievable time. I talked to a number of the golfers who said, it's the first time we've seen crowds. You know, they've had most of the tournaments haven't had that big of a crowd.
Well, let's talk about the kids and going back to school. I mean, just we get to have good things, and we get to live life normally, at least for now. Let's talk about children, schools, and masks and mandates, and sure, my child's not wearing a mask, which, you know, on your side of the political fence, that happens every day. This is going to be an interesting couple of weeks here as we put this thing back together.
Well,
right?
So it's interesting. I mean, you know, some people are demanding that we mandate what every local school system does. There are some of my fellow governors who are mandating that they can't make decisions, you know, outlawing mask wearing and saying, you know, local school systems can't require a mask.
That seems sort of anti-Republican.
Yeah, traditional Republican conservative values are let the local leaders make their decisions, push it down, like, you know, as your former county executive. It's like, it's so that, you know, that's what we've tried to do. 90 95% of our kids are already required to have a mask by local government decisions, which is the way I said we were going to do it. 20 out of our 24 counties had already local school boards, duly elected school boards who have that power, already made that decision. Just last week, the legislature asked the state board to mandate for the other remaining, it's less than 5% of the kids in four very rural counties. And so the legislature has to take a vote next week as to whether they're going to support that. That's not, you know, we're all for people, you know, doing what they believe is right for their community.
We are with Governor Larry Hogan. We're at the Boatyard, and I showed the faith that you were going to make this happen here on the last day, but we've been all over the state. There's so many issues. Transportation. Let's talk about that one, because that,
well, we can't.
There was transportation for me, because I've transported everywhere.
You've been transported.
I've been to every Royal Farms and Wise Markets in this state, I promise
you. Get some fried chicken while you're at Royal Farms.
It was chicken palooza, believe it. Crab cake palooza, too.
Well, but you know, it's one of the nice things about Baltimore Positive, and one of the nice things about discussion with Governor Hogan is we don't have to agree on everything.
No.
And we probably have a disagreement on transportation, and it has to do with, and I'd like to give you a chance to articulate your view, and it has to do with prioritizing mass transit versus roads and bridges, per se. And obviously, there was a dust-up, something I wasn't supportive of. You and I agreed to disagree over canceling the Red Line.
Right.
But where do you come down now, not only as someone who's completing his term as governor, but someone who may have presidential aspirations? How do
I'm
we
sure
as a nation,
that.
Well, we'll talk about that. How do we balance the need for mass transit versus roads?
Well, so no governor in the history of the state has ever invested more in transit than I have. And we do spend more than 50% of our transportation budget on transit. We're building the largest transit system and largest public-private transit system in America right now in the Purple Line in the Washington suburbs through Prince George's County and Montgomery County. Right now, we've invested, for example, in Baltimore City, $4.8 billion, so more than any other governor in history, including two of them that were Baltimore mayors, in transit and in roads. We rebuilt the entire transportation system and bus system in Baltimore. But the Red Line was something that all the transportation experts said made no sense whatsoever. It was the train to nowhere. Our transportation experts said it was a wasteful boondoggle. The Washington Post editorial board said it made no transportation or economic sense whatsoever. When I ran for governor in 2014, I promised not to do the Red Line. It's one of the reasons why I was elected. Anthony Brown promised to do the Red Line. Less than 50% of the people in Baltimore support it, and almost no one else in the state. And Baltimore is about 9% of the population. So I think about 95% of the people agree with me, and they're against the Red Line. And we're not going to change our mind
after 7 years.
So you're convinced
I was wrong.
I'm still convinced you have no idea what you're talking about.
There we go. Let's have a crack.
But I'm glad you brought it up so I could correct you.
Well, I live in Baltimore, and there's a perception that you're not pro Baltimore. I'm doing Baltimore Positive.
Yeah.
So
though, let me just touch on that. I just came from Baltimore.
You're wearing purple.
I'm wearing purple. I'm a Ravens fan, obviously. But even though I grew up in the Washington suburbs,
did you ever root for the Washington football team or no?
The Washington football team before they became the Washington football team, when they had that previous name, I grew up in Prince George's County, so I grew up as
We win more in Baltimore.
A fan of that team. But then about 20 years ago, I switched over, and I still want them to do well. It's great to have two NFL teams in the state, but when they're playing each other, I'm going to be with the Ravens.
Well, I want to jump back,
but on Baltimore. Let me talk about
that. Before you do that, Governor, real quick, I just want to jump back on the Red Line, and I promise not to belabor it.
Yeah.
Is there a need?
I think it's only you and the Baltimore Sun editorial board that wants that. No, I can promise you, the voters of Maryland do not want that.
You think I can fit the supporters in a small room? That's what you're saying.
I mean, you couldn't even fill up the Boatyard bar.
Well, humor me for a minute. Do we need some kind of mass transit in Baltimore City?
Yeah, it would certainly help. I mean, right now we have the least utilized transit system in America in Baltimore City. And the one that really works is the bus system, which is why we put another $500 million into that, because it's actually moving a lot of people. But nobody rides the existing metro system in Baltimore. It's because it doesn't go anywhere. The Red Line really wasn't going to make much of a difference in that. Wasn't going to increase ridership. And our entire transportation department was unanimously opposed to it. Not, in addition to the fact that I was opposed to it, they came in and said, we can't build this thing. So that's
While we're on Baltimore, Nestor, can
but
I
on Baltimore, quick, let me talk about this. Well, I just came back from Baltimore. Yeah, there's a the Baltimore Sun editorial board always likes to attack me and say I'm not from Baltimore, don't care about Baltimore.
Well, I'm trying to sell my condo in Baltimore, and I'm invested in Baltimore, so that's really
my
issue.
I'm invested in Baltimore too. I think we've invested twice as much in Baltimore as any other governor. We've put $22 billion, $9 billion in direct aid, $6.5 billion in increases in education 7 years in a row. $1 billion in public safety. I mean, we're getting back from billions of dollars of redevelopment projects, one of which we were at Perkins Homes today with a $1 billion redevelopment project. I started a project when I first became governor, Project Core. Today we tore down our 5,000th blighted property that we're investing billions in redeveloping. I can tell you no one has ever invested more in education in Baltimore, more in transportation in Baltimore, more in public safety in Baltimore, or more total investment, $22 billion in Baltimore City. But I can't solve all the problems. You know, I've been through, I think, four mayors in 6 years and five police commissioners. And, we've got a prosecutor that doesn't want to put really bad criminals in jail.
We rail about that all the time.
Well, I can't control
your side of that.
I can't control the superintendent of schools or local school board. You know, we invest two or three times as much in the kids in Baltimore, but they still aren't doing a good job of educating those kids. They're getting cheated. So, you know, I understand we haven't solved the problems of Baltimore, but that's going to take some help from the leaders in Baltimore. But I can tell you, no one has ever provided more support than I have.
Well, just build on that for a minute, Governor. There's no issue that in our 3 years that we probably have focused on more than crime in Baltimore. And
crime is why I can't sell my house. I mean, it's not the view. No, it's not the beauty.
That's why we have a lot of the problems. Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot. We know how committed the mayor is and other public officials. Everybody's heart is in the right place. Let's go to sort of Schoolhouse Rock for our listeners. What role can the state and a governor play in making Baltimore safer? I think that's what people grapple with.
Well, the one time it was safe was during the riots when I came in after a couple of hours and brought 4,000 members of the National Guard and 1,000 additional police officers. We had absolutely no crime for a solid week, and we allowed the peaceful protests.
But you can't do that full time.
Right. We don't want to declare martial law and then take over. But what we have provided, I mentioned $1 billion. All the $22 billion is all about trying to solve the root causes of the problems in Baltimore: better education, more job opportunities. You know, but $1 billion was directly for fighting crime, just in public safety. And, we put more into it than the city of Baltimore does. We have five state police agencies that are cooperating. I brought together 28 different law enforcement agencies, federal, state, and local, to go in to help them with multiple kinds of surges. And the basic problem is, and I'm not trying to point fingers, I'm just saying here's why I can't get it solved. We have 300 murders last year.
We're going to have 300 again.
Only seven of them were prosecuted.
Well,
so
we've had Tharuth Vigniarajah when he's run, right? We've talked to everybody on every side of the political debate.
So police officers get frustrated. First, they're underfunded. They don't have enough of them, even though we keep putting money in to help them with recruitment and better pay and better equipment. But the police officers feel like they keep arresting the same people over and over again for violent crimes. Then they don't, either the prosecutor doesn't prosecute them, the charges get dropped, they're back on the streets. Witnesses are afraid to testify because they know the guy's going to be back on the street later that day, even if he shot somebody. And then, even if you do get the prosecutor to try to prosecute a case, you have judges in Baltimore City that won't give them a sentence. So they're out on 30 days on a violent crime. And they come back and do it again.
So what would you say?
The vast majority of our crimes are committed by people that have been, arrested, 10, 12 times for violent crimes.
We've heard that a lot, Governor. That's interesting. And that does become somewhat of a state issue. We've heard from a number of people, and it goes to what you just said, that one of the real places to begin, perhaps, is the whole parole and probation and follow up because of the recidivism. And there's a real sense that we haven't focused enough. And meanwhile, while we're focusing on that,
we got to focus on crab cakes.
Something else.
You know what?
Thank you.
We're just going to keep, we'll roll through.
We're just going to keep going.
Yeah, let's roll through.